from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on the G and Ursula Show. G is off for the remainder of the show today. Dres has stepped in on very short notice. Good morning, Dres.
Good morning, Ursula.
Always tons of fun to co-host the show with you, and you're doing a fabulous job. I mean,
Thank you.
We said moments notice, it literally was 5 minutes. Can you be on?
Yeah.
We are very lucky to have you. Just a reminder that you can always text us, 888-973-CHIRO. We love hearing your feedback. You also give us great ideas, and we just love that interaction with you. Also, join us on our Facebook community, the G and Ursula Show Facebook page. We love that as well. We are going to be doing Agree to Disagree coming up at 11:33, but right now we are going to introduce a guest. And just a reminder, this hour of our show is brought to you by Guardian Roofing and Pest Control. So we are just a few weeks away from the November elections. Hard to believe, it's just a couple weeks away. And on the G and Ursula Show, we've been introducing you to candidates of some of the most high-profile races. And today we are focusing on the Seattle City Council at-large position 9, which is an open seat because current council president Lorena Gonzalez is running for mayor. We've invited Sarah Nelson and Nikita Oliver to join us on the show. And Sarah has accepted our invitation so far. She is the co-founder of Fremont Brewing, and she joins us now live. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So I want to just start right off the bat on the homelessness crisis, which is the biggest issue for all Seattle voters and for the region really as a whole. What can you tell us about your beliefs in terms of how to address the crisis that has really plagued this city for many years now?
Well, we're not starting off with any softball, are we? Hey, the fact is that this council has no plan. We've been spending more and more money every year, and the problem has only gotten worse. And so it's time to basically follow best practices that have worked in other cities. And I can talk about the elements of what works, but it has to do with actually knowing our homeless population, what services are needed, coordinating service providers. Right now, there is no coordination amongst them or with city agencies. And we need to have a real-time list of actual housing options that are available so that when we're doing outreach to encampments and asking people to leave our parks and open spaces, we can provide the housing option that's right for them. It's a complicated issue, but the status quo is not sustainable, and it's time that we actually get a plan and implement it for the benefit of everyone in this city.
Sarah, I do want to ask you something very specific. You know that Compassion Seattle was very popular among Seattle voters, but we won't get a chance to vote on it. Would you have been in support of that?
I would have voted for it, and here's why. It was the first of all, it was a plan written on paper. But more important than that, it contained an element that is missing from our response so far, and that is Seattle funding of mental health and substance abuse treatment. That's a huge issue. We should be offering that, contracting with service providers, because this is a driver and a result of homelessness. And so I supported Compassion Seattle largely because of that element, that it would have funded these services.
I could talk to you about 1,000 things, Sarah. I'm fascinated and very interested in this race with you and Nikita for a lot of obvious reasons. Now, you oppose defunding the police, if I'm correct?
That is true.
Okay, so I know you're proposing like zone changes to increase density in single family neighborhoods. Is there some part of that that can start to lean towards or breed more profiling? And how does that deal with the actions of police in communities of color?
Well, when I'm talking to people living in communities of color, I just met with Theo this morning of Island Soul. I've been talking to Justin of Arc Lodge Cinemas. People in neighborhoods that are impacted by crime tell me over and over again they don't want to defund the police. They want an effective police response. And I'm endorsed by Reverend Harriet Walden, Mothers for Police Accountability, and Victoria Beach, chair of the African American Advisory Community Council. And what we need is reform of the police, definitely. But defunding at a time of skyrocketing gun violence and rising crime across the city is the wrong idea. And my opponent wants to abolish the police. And so I believe that we can reform the police in a manner that keeps people safe and holds officers accountable for misconduct.
So what? Okay, that's what I was about to ask you. So you talk about reform. I actually agree with you. How do we reform it? What are the ways? Okay. What are the things that we can do to get to where? Because I'm a black man from a black community in Seattle, and I don't want to defund the police. I do, however, want to be safe from not only a perpetrator, from police who have issues. So how do we do that?
Well, first of all, we recruit officers from black and brown communities. This will go far in building trust between law enforcement and the community, and it will overcome language barriers and basically establish more of what we call a community policing model. So that is one thing. Recruit and retain officers of color, number one. And then when we have enough officers, we need to bring our staffing levels back up. Make sure we bring back the community policing teams and expand the crisis response teams, which provide a combination of uniformed officers and social workers to respond to people in crisis. But that is a role. I mean, that can help reform. We need to tie the new SPOG contract with compliance with the consent decree. We could also bring back the Seattle Police Academy, which used to be in existence to teach recruits that came out of the police academy that's basically run by the Washington State, to teach them the skills they need in a large urban city, de-escalation, anti-bias. So there is a lot that we can do to reform the police, and I think that that's where we need to focus. My opponent says abolish the police and that reform does not work. I disagree, and public safety is a core responsibility of the city government, and people need to feel safe.
Sarah, I want to go back to one more question about the homelessness crisis. One of the big issues right now is what's happening in our parks and on our sidewalks. Do you believe in clearing them if there are people who refuse to get services? I mean, what is your position on removing encampments?
My position is that we need to lead with housing first principles so that people can get into housing. Again, it goes back to being able to offer something that's available right now, and we need a whole army of outreach workers that are actual employees that are having repeat contacts with folks in encampments. I believe that people actually want a safer, cleaner place to live. And we have not set up the systems to do that. Now, when it comes to, last resort, if people still don't want to go, I believe that we need to clear encampments. Some people call it sweeps. I call it help. Why? Because as someone in recovery, I know that if you've got a vulnerability to addiction, just ignoring encampments makes the problem worse. Not just for, so we're not just talking about impacts to the surrounding community. We're talking about the people living in encampments. We have got to focus on getting them help, but we also have to restore our parks and open spaces for their intended use.
Okay, I want to talk about a different kind of housing, and this is in terms of single family neighborhoods. I know Lorena Gonzalez and Bruce Harrell have talked about their differences, with Lorena saying that there shouldn't be any single-family neighborhoods that are solely single-family. What is your position on that?
My position is that we already transformed single-family zones when we allowed for up to three units per lot with the accessory dwelling unit legislation. So essentially, we've already gotten rid of single-family. Let's not talk about the changing of the name from single-family to neighborhood residential. The point is that I believe that we do need more residential infill because we have a growing population and we have people that want to age in place. And on fixed incomes, they want to be able to rent out part of their property, and that's a good thing. And when I'm talking to people in neighborhoods that are undergoing the pressures of gentrification, they're worried about displacement, and they want to be able to stay in their homes. So I believe that we need to be very careful when we're talking about land use changes, because I don't think we should have a one size fits all, because we need to be concerned about individual neighborhoods and what they're undergoing. And when I'm talking to folks in the CD, they want to stay in their single family homes. They want to pass it down to their kids and grandkids. And so, that is my position. We need residential infill. We need more housing options for sure, duplexes, triplexes, etc. But we also have to keep people in their homes.
Okay. So then what role, in your opinion, does the council need to play in not just as far as homes, but black businesses, right? And businesses for people of color in ensuring that the entrepreneurs and the businesses are present and thriving in Seattle?
I'm glad for this question because I believe that access to opportunity to build generational wealth is key to transformational change. And I have been speaking with a lot of black business owners. And so just this morning, access to capital. And I learned in our conversation this morning that that lending practices are still biased and racist. And so we could use our leverage with the banks that the city of Seattle uses to ensure that loans are getting to where they're needed. Technical support, getting everything from help writing a business plan to navigating our totally broken, labyrinthine licensing and permitting system, a one-stop shop on the City of Seattle's website so that small businesses owners who want to start a business or grow their business know what they have to do and what licenses to get. And then finally, it's foreclosure prevention, both for homeowners and businesses who own their spaces. So there is so much that we can do, and I know what businesses need. I understand their difficulties, and I've informed myself on the specific issues that black business owners need. But here's the deal. Across the city, what I hear all the time is, I want somebody to stop throwing bricks through my windows. I would like not to keep getting ripped off. ArcLodge Cinema, they were robbed twice in a month. And so public safety, again, is key to helping all businesses and especially black-owned businesses, because oftentimes they're in high-crime neighborhoods. And so that is what I'm hearing across the board as well.
Another question, maybe two parts. So you're quoted, I believe it's saying Oliver's, it's like a policy extremist, right? I want to know in what ways, when you look at Nikita and you say she's a policy extremist, and could what she's presenting just be drastic solutions to drastic long-term systemic problems?
I think it's extreme to call for the abolishment of the police, or even to call for 50% defunding without a plan for keeping people safe first. That's one example. Another example is, I think that it's wrongheaded and extreme to create a new fund within the Parks Department to help people who are living in parks keep living in parks. That is, our parks are our commons and need to be restored to their intended use. And also, like I've already said, people need to be moved into housing fast. And frittering away money to set up whatever kind of fund is money taken away from building those units to house people. Those are two examples.
Sarah, okay, the dysfunction at City Hall is well documented. We talk often about all the different crises that the city is facing, although there are many areas where Seattle's doing well. You are the co-owner of Fremont Brewery. Why on earth do you want to run for city council?
Well, because I'm a policy wonk and I care about my city. I look around my city. I've lived here for 31 years. I have two sons, 16 and 17, and I see what's happening and I think, what happened? What's going on? We can do better. And I am running a change campaign to bring back accountable leadership because I care and because I think that local politics is where it's at. It's what impacts people's daily lives. And I also worked for 10 years as a legislative advisor to a city council member back when council was a functioning body.
Richard
so I
Conlon.
Know this stuff.
That was
yeah.
Richard Conlon,
I
right?
know that. Yep, that was council member Richard Conlon. So I worked for him from 2002 to 2013 with a couple of years break to start Fremont Brewing. I understand that the daily block and tackle of governing is complicated. And I understand that good policy does not start with an agenda, which seems to be happening now. It starts with humility. It's and asking what can we do better, and then bringing people together, considering all viewpoints, hashing out the details of a piece of legislation, and then course correcting if we're wrong. That is not happening. So when you ask why am I running, because I think it's interesting, and I think the city needs help, and I'm the right person at the right time to do it.
We've got 30 seconds left, and this is a remark, but I want you to react to it. You are considered the more conservative one in this particular race. Have you ever thought of your name, the word conservative, being used to describe you?
Only in Seattle am I the conservative candidate. I grew up poor. I paid for my babies. I gave my babysitting money to pay the electric bills. I was a college student activist. I met my husband at WGO protests. I went to jail protesting the CIA on campus. So only in Seattle am I the conservative. I lead with the progressive values that are shared by the vast majority of Seattleites. But the difference with me is that I actually get things done. Yes, I own a small business, and small businesses are the fabric of our community and in the job creators. And so I'm proud that I provide for my community by offering jobs and healthcare. I don't think that's conservative. I think that is noble and common sense.
Sarah Nelson, we appreciate your time. Sarah is running for the city council at large, position 9, and you, Seattle voters, will be weighing in just a couple of weeks. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me again. Bye-bye.
Okay, still ahead, we are going to do an abbreviated version of Agree to Disagree. This is the G and Ursula Show. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Just a reminder, you can text us at 888-973-CHIRO. It is time for us to agree to disagree, brought to you by Johnny Tsunami.
One of these days, we just got to take off the gloves, just really go at it.
All right, as we talked about earlier in the show, today's the day that Washington State VAX mandate deadline goes into effect. It applies to most state government workers, teachers, and healthcare workers. If you didn't get vaccinated or didn't get an exemption, you're going to lose your job. Dres, are you surprised that Inslee and the states followed through with the threat to fire people if they don't get vaxxed? And do you agree with the mandate?
I am not surprised because I think this is holistic. This is not about Seattle. This is about the country and what's going on. I absolutely do not agree with it. I think we needed to find some ways to allow people, and we needed to increase testing. And because we're not talking about breakthrough cases, anyone can spread the disease. It's still mind-boggling to me. It doesn't make sense to me that an unvaxxed person and a vaxxed person can both spread the disease. So why are we trying to mandate it? I think we need to increase testing, and that's the answer to the problem, but that's me. What about you, Ursula?
So I do agree with the mandate, and I believe it has worked. The place I'm going to agree with you, though, is that I was hoping that people won't be fired. And as of right now, I've yet to hear that people have been fired. People have been quitting. in advance or resigning or retiring early. And my hope was that the very few, and it's a very small percentage, it's a much smaller percentage anyway, I was hoping that there could be some kind of middle ground in terms of allowing them to get tested regularly, which again has been done and is being done in some other states. So we have the strictest mandate, and with this other places are having deadlines, but they've got other options. And I'm still hoping, I'm holding out hope that some people won't have to lose their jobs, because for those who've had this longtime career and to lose it over this, I think it is a shame.
Yep.
But that said, you can't help but look at the numbers and say the mandate has worked, because more people have definitely gotten vaccinated in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, but the mandate has forced you. It's not working by way of, it's a forced hand. It's the way the left moves, right? The left is just as brutal as the right. You just, they just passive aggressively make things happen. But this is, yeah, it's working by way of forcing people. There are tons of people who are like, fine, I got it because I had to save my job.
And then you can also look at it and say, you're not just saving your job, but you are potentially saving many other lives. And you and I can agree to disagree on, yes, there are breakthrough cases, but ask any doctor in any hospital, the vast majority of people who are really, really sick or who are dying are people who've been unvaccinated. And yes, you can still spread it even if you have been vaccinated. But the truth is that there is a lesser, according to studies, there is a lesser chance if you have been vaccinated. So it's all about risk mitigation. It's not without risk either way.
I'll say this, and I'll digress in our agree to disagree. But I'll say this. Okay, if you just listen to everything you just recited. Mm-hmm. First, there's the tagline they give us, which is you're helping save someone else. You're not. We all spread it. So that's the first part. If we all spread it, the only risk to someone, the main risk, excuse me, to someone unvaccinated is to themselves.
Okay.
It's not to someone.
I'm going to ask you. I got to ask you. Okay. I know you're vaccinated. Okay. Well, I want to ask you something.
And I can spread it. I can spread it just like anyone else. I could get COVID, spread it just like someone unvaccinated. The difference is I probably won't die, right? I have a better chance of survival. The person who's unvaccinated can spread it just like anyone else. So this tagline that we're saving someone else is my only issue. Saving yourself, yes. Creating less of a problem on hospitals, yes, I'm with that. But when we use this tagline like they're insensitive and they're selfish, no, they're...
Did you ever hear that word come out of my mouth?
No, not you, not you. I apologize. I am unfairly putting other people's words in your mouth. That's wrong. Yes. Sorry.
Okay, I want to ask you, though, because I know that your mom has been in an assisted living facility like my dad.
Yeah.
I know there was a time when I asked you, are you okay with people unvaccinated working with your mom? What was your answer?
My answer was no.
So what has changed?
And that answer has changed based on the information. The most crucial thing we could be doing right now, there is something happening that is appalling. The idea that we're not reporting or recording breakthrough cases. The most important data we need right now is breakthrough cases. To really understand this vaccine, we need to know how many people who are vaccinated are coming down with COVID and all of the dealings around that. The fact that that information is not being given is the scariest part of this, because we're treating people who are unvaccinated a certain way. And I'm fine with that if we have data, but we don't have any data. We're just reciting things. And I'm like, now I would have no problem if they're being tested continually. That's what I would want
for
anyone.
That's the one place where you and I agree.
A lot of Superman
news. The testing, just to be clear, the testing.
Right,
okay,
I know.
So a lot of Superman news lately, and this is DC Comics. This is the new thing that came today. DC Comics has changed what Superman stands for. It used to be Truth, Justice, and the American Way. Now the comic says he stands for Truth, Justice, and a Better Tomorrow. Ursula, do you think this decision is a good one, and why do you think they made this choice?
Well, my initial thought was, oh no, is this going to be like another one of those woke type moves, which people are just going to jump on, and then now we're going to be divided over this too. Now we can't even all love Superman because of this. And no, I'm actually reading the background on why this happened. And so did you know that the Truth, Justice, and American Way, that wasn't the original mission statement. When the comic was first, that actually came about in the 40s during the war. And so it was a way, it was seen as a way to cheer on American military efforts during World War II. And then it was revived again for the Adventures of Superman TV series that aired in the 50s and during those first days of the Cold War and then McCarthyism, paranoia, et cetera, et cetera. So if you look at the history, it's like Superman's mission statement has actually changed with time. So what they're saying now is we want to change it because truth, justice, and a better tomorrow is a little optimistic. It kind of encompasses what we're dealing with right now, and it fits, and it's also exciting. I think it's just a way to also get Superman in the news, don't you think? Because let's face it, just about a week ago, DC announced that John Kent, Superman's son, who also wears the iconic S shield as a superhero, is going to come out as bisexual. So I think there's just, it's evolving, you know, which I think is a good thing.
I think it's like you said, trying to get him relevant because Batman's kicking his butt right now. Batman's everywhere. We've been watching Batman for years. We're into Batman. I don't like this at all. I'm sorry. I'm out on all of it. I don't like progressive Superman. I'm not into it. I don't like when we try to fit in. And this is my reason, right? I don't like us trying to fit in. It's okay to keep classics where they are. I don't like, I saw the meme of the sun or someone being bisexual. I'm just, oh God, stop trying to fit in. I don't need you to fit in. I've heard James Bond's going to be black. Oh, spare me. Please don't. I don't need you to fit in. Create characters. We are in a world. They created Superman. Create something else. Create somebody else who is bisexual. Someone who is black. Someone who is a woman. Like, we don't have to try to fit in. Let's just be where we are. Like, it's okay for whatever was is what was. I don't need you to try to fit it to Wonder Woman's going to be trans. And it's just, oh, come on, man. Just create a trans.
Oh, you sound
superhero.
Like someone who's like saying, get off my lawn. Dude.
No, I'm just saying it's a classic. Like, I don't want to see a future Martin Luther King who's white. Right?
That's an actual person. Okay, John Kent is not, that's a,
but it's a
fictional person.
Fine, but it is what it is. It's like when they created, I don't want to see the Black Panther be white. How about that? It's fictional. Would you be okay with that?
No.
Ah,
no, because
so you agree
it's
with me?
Black Panther.
Oh, okay,
oh my goodness. I don't think we agreed on a darn thing here. Okay, still ahead. We hear ya, and of course, our words to live by. You are listening to The G and Ursula Show. It is now 11:49, and we are just about to wrap up our show. Welcome to Monday. Hopefully, we help make your Monday a little bit easier. But on that topic, let's start with some of our texts. You can have the honors first, Trays.
All right, Mondays, Rob and Pew Allop. Just rip off that Monday Band-Aid and let's skip to Tuesday.
Don't you wish sometimes we could just do that?
Yes.
Okay, on the mandate deadline, 206 says, no sympathy for public workers. They won't protect themselves to protect us. Zero tolerance. Also, many stories of these long-term veterans saying they're going to leave when in reality they're at retirement age and we're likely planning to leave anyway, and they're simply dramatizing the event.
Wow. From the 206, today's the day that G said nobody would leave their high-paying jobs over the vaccine. Seems like he was wrong.
Bob and Roy says, LOL, seriously, these same people were essential employees while you guys were sitting at home. I hope when he says you guys, I have yet to sit at home one day. I've been coming in to work the whole time.
Yeah. 425, oh, how quickly things change. 3 years ago, Big Pharma was the enemy. Today, they're the hero. Last year, emergency workers were heroes. Now they're being chased out of their jobs. When I read all this, this is just sad. You know what I mean?
It really is. And again, I just go back to, can we somehow find a way not to lose your job? Especially if you've been there, unless you're just wanting to leave anyway. Kai, who is a regular texter, says, so awesome. This is what they wanted when you vote for these people. You got it. That's why it's so awesome just to sit back now with my popcorn and watch it all develop.
Thanks, Kai. To all the school bus drivers, let's talk about that. Liz from Gig Harbor. It's a big-time job. Where do you think all this money is always coming from?
425 says, most of us do the job because we love being around kids. Otherwise, how would we get up at 4:30 a.m.?
Ah, true story. 425, come on, Ursula. The livable wage crack has gotten out of control. Low-skilled workers get lower wages, period. You don't deserve a livable wage if you choose to be a low-skilled worker. Sheesh.
That is really? Not. I just disagree with that.
Right.
Someone said, I was correct when it was, I said it was around $24 an hour on average. In most cases, a lot of times it's part-time. Okay, 425 says, it's not a problem most people think it's such an easy thing to become a school bus driver, but there's a lot that goes into it. I wouldn't trade it in for the world. I love it, but it is not easy.
I can believe that. 425, I've been a bus driver for many years, and our district has tried hiring people and training them, but it's not so easy as it takes months to train someone. Some people can't qualify medically or have a bad driving record. A lot can't handle working on a bus with kids, and some can find their way around the city. You should investigate what it takes to pass the CDL physical alone, and then to pass the CDL comprehensive exam and driver's test. Interesting.
On the Seahawks, Roger in Fife says, did you see the way Geno was carrying the ball in that last play of the game? Please explain to me why he was holding the ball out in front of him as he was running. I truly don't understand.
I refuse to talk about the Seahawks on the grounds that my feelings are hurt. All right, so talk about how someone lost weight. 360, I am literally half the man I used to be. 400 pounds to 193. I had surgery 7 years ago and have never been ashamed to openly discuss it, if for no other reason than to help others realize how wonderful life can be.
And on our Sarah Nelson interview, 360 says, I don't live in Seattle, but if I did, Sarah would get my vote. She has all of the attributes needed to rescue the city from the mess that it's currently in. I hope the intelligent voters of Seattle will get to the polls and bring people like Sarah in to resolve Seattle's overly progressive, extreme left-wing thinking crisis. Good luck to her and her campaign.
Thanks for sending in that text, Sarah. We appreciate it.
She did not send that in. Okay, it is time for Words to Live By. And I just want to remind everybody that we need to let people know when we appreciate them. And I appreciate all of you. And this is a quote from Marcel Proust. And it is to let us be grateful to people who make us happy. They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom. Our Words to Live By are brought to you by ProClub.com, a club like no other. Thank you, Dres, for stepping in on such short notice. Appreciate
this
you.
It was lovely. I love doing it. Thank you.
Chris Martin, thank you for great producing, as always.
Oh, thanks.
And Andrew, thank you for the great job that you do on the board. And I can't say it enough. We love you, all of you listeners who text us, who send us your feedback, who join us every morning from 9 to noon. We really appreciate you. Want you to have an amazing day. And just a reminder, the Dori Monson Show is next. Stay with us.